This is for all the girls who grew up without strong geek role models to help them discover their geek dreams.
For everyone who's ever been quizzed about their video game knowledge because girls don't play games.
Geek Hearing is working to bring female identifying geeks into their prime to be the role models, dreams, and voices.
About to show these boys how we do it.
Higher, further, faster, baby.
It's not about deserve.
I'm not an owl!
A girl has no name. There is something supernatural at work here.
It's about what you believe.
Did I step on your mom?
Wingardium Leviosa.
Now on, you do as I tell you.
May the odds be ever in your favor.
Are you ready for this?
Are you ready for this?
Welcome to Geek Hearing, a critical geek culture podcast where we talk the good and the bad parts of being a chick in a male-dominated environment. Hi, my name is Monica, and with me today is my lovely, amazing, glorious, with beautiful brushes and a wonderful journal equipped, and a very beautiful green sweater, co-host Amanda! I tried really hard.
That was a wonderful introduction. I feel really special to be here with you sharing this space today, talking about what we're talking about, geeking out about the shit, and that we're both wearing greens of some kind.
What? What? It's yellow. What are you wearing?
You said that I was wearing green, and I was like, it's kind of green,
I guess. I was wearing green?
You said what the fuck I was is wearing wrong green. With...
I did?
Yes.
Oh my god. That's how not working my brain is anymore. I need to... I am not even colorblind. What the fuck? Oh god.
Chad agrees with me. Chad is saying that you definitely said I'm wearing green.
I didn't even question you. You could have said, I said your sweatshirt was pink, and I would have said, yeah, that sounds like something I would do just because.
It's kind of like a greeny yellow, a yellowy green, like that, like, is it yellow? Is it green? Is it so bright no one actually
I was actually even looking at it when I said it. I don't know why I said green. I don't know
why you say most of the things you say, so.
That is true. It's soon to be Christmas. We all need a freaking holiday. And that's it. That's the thing.
That's the plan. That time off.
That's the plan. That's the result. That's the everything. A really bright green. Now, Chad agrees with me, too. It's very confusing. Is
Chad
that like
agrees
the Laurel
with you,
and Yanni
don't agree
thing?
With you?
I don't agree with me. For me, it's yellow because I saw more of it before and it was yellow, but...
It's yellow. My dad says it's green, though.
I don't know. Probably
either.
That's one of the things that changes a bit with the light. Hmm. I never agree with me, Sideburb. Never. I'm like, people say I said something. I'm like, sure, that's what happened.
Like, did I? Sounds like me.
Did? Sounds like me. Sounds like something weird.
I say that often as well. I'm like, did I say that? That's really smart of me.
Well, that is something I hardly ever say. A lighting designer, says Taunt, is what we need.
I could turn the lights on, but they're awkward. I don't like them. They're way over there.
And also, you sit in the window, so it's not like you're super freaking dark or anything.
It's true. Yeah.
Anyway,
hey-ho.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. I'm pre-stressed for my week, but I'm fine. How are you?
You're pre-stressed? It's already Tuesday.
I know.
So they're only... I mean, you still have today left, so that's one that doesn't count for me anymore. So for me, there are only 3 days left in the week.
Yeah, see, in one of my work teams, we are closing on Friday. And normally, like last year or the year before, we also closed for 2 weeks over Christmas. But we had like 2 to 3 weeks that we were getting extra work. Because like the work isn't stopping. We're just doing it in advance. And we had like 2 to 3 weeks to do all this extra work. Except for some reason, we're only getting the extra work now. And I'm like, anyone all done for Friday? Fuck you. I'm like, ha ha ha.
Okay, I see. Okay, I see why you're pre-stressed for that, for sure. Mm-hmm. let's just hope it's all going to go down well.
That'll be fine.
It will be fine. It's fine. It's fine. I mean, if there's one meme in 2020 that's still valid, it's the "it's fine" meme. Mm-hmm. So.
That's that.
But it's going to work out well.
It's fine. If I'm dead, you'll know why.
Exactly. But you won't be. No. Because we need to record things still.
Yeah. So what are we talking about today?
We are talking about the Queen's Gambit. Because number one, we're still in tabletop RPG month. And we thought it's oddly fitting. Because it's a tabletop game. And the series, the mini series actually on Netflix, was actually really cool.
Yeah. Like, I didn't think I would ever become obsessed with a TV show about chess. And yet here we are. Like, what is this, a 2020 thing? Like, what else can 2020 throw at us? Or is it just like, this is where we all are in our lives, where a TV show about chess is actually the best thing we've seen all year?
I don't know if I would go that far that it's the best thing I've seen all year, but it's pretty good. Like, it's, and honestly, the actress, she can just sit there and I will look at her for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Because it's unbelievable what kind of grace this person has. And I don't know, too pretty, I don't know. It's just, there's just something about her where it's just like, how can you be actual human? How can something human? Like you exist in the world?
Yeah, there, it's almost like a otherworldly, beautiful and graceful. And
yeah,
there's something just eerily beautiful about her.
Yeah, and I don't know. And she's not really doing loads of things, and she's often quite awkward too. But the way, I don't know, it's something about it that's super about her that's just fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And I mean,
but
like, let's...
it's not about what she looks like in general, but it's about something different. What it is? What is it about, Amanda?
Her talent.
What?
What are you asking me?
What is the Queen's Gambit about?
Oh, I thought we were still talking about Anya Taylor-Joy here. For I was like, it's about her talent. She's a very talented actress. So the Queen's Gambit is about, we follow the story of Beth Harmon, who was orphaned at the tender age of 9. She's a prodigious introvert who discovers and masters the game of chess in the 1960s USA. But child stardom comes at a price. Dun 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 dun.
Dun 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 dun. I love that. Yeah. She basically immediately, that's the second she gets into the orphanage, there is this one girl who is telling her about the ins and outs of the meds that they're getting there. And in the 1960s, they tranquilized all the kids in orphanages, basically. And that's the meds that she then gets. And the girl that she meets there, what's her face again? What's her name? Jolene?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
She tells her that she should just stack those green pills and basically then decide to take them in the evening, because that's when it's more fun to take them. And unfortunately, she really enjoys those meds and develops a nice addiction to the green pills.
Mm-hmm. And along with her addiction to the green pills, she discovers that she can use them to help her self-concentrate, focus, and play through chess moves. I said chest and that made me laugh. Chess moves. Kind of like visualizing the pieces moving on a gigantic chessboard on the ceiling, which is really mm-hmm. trippy. But it's cool.
It's really trippy.
I was like, wow.
It looks fascinating though.
Mm-hmm.
Like when the how the camera and how the animation basically puts it together, it's just interesting to look at. Also, I think they've done a great job with that. She initially learns chess from the janitor in the orphanage, so it's not something that she acquires because of what the orphanage does for her, but because she goes down and washes or some sponges or cleans some sponges, and there she finds the janitor, and the janitor is playing chess.
They're not sponges, they're like chalk erasers, and you have got to go and clap them.
That's what we would have called sponges in school.
You call those sponge? Gosh, it's weird.
We have sponges that we clean the whiteboard with.
These aren't sponges. They've got like a hard wooden bit, and then they've got like these felt kind of thing. Not felt, kind of like felt.
But it does what sponges do.
But you don't get them wet. Whereas, but like,
she cleans them either way.
By clapping them.
If she's clapping them or if she's wiping them, making them wet, is absolutely irrelevant for the story. She cleans whatever the chalkboards are cleaned with next to the janitor. It doesn't matter if that's a sponge that's wet that she washes out or if she's clapping this felty whatever thing it is called. But sure, then it's a felty thing. Oh, God.
These are the important cultural differences that we really need to talk about on Geek Herring, though.
Yeah, of course. Then let's like have an episode, the Christmas episode. We can talk about felts or sponges. What are you going with? That's how we end 2020 with, whether you're wet or dry.
I personally would like to end 2020 wet.
Of course you do. Oh, God. Anyway, besides the sponge discussion, because we're actually talking about chess now. Let's hope Tom is out of quarantine by then, yes. The look on Amanda's face, I'm sad that the podcast people can't see it right now. It's desperate. That's a time spoiler alert. Oh, God. She's just gonna... Oh, my God. What is this episode again? This time we can't even blame everyone. It's fully self-made.
I just don't understand how this is possible. We're talking about the Queen's Gambit. How did we get dirty like this?
That's because you started with the sponge and the felt discussion. You can draw a lot of sponges. Yes. So, the janitor teaches
Beth Harmon learns how to play chess. From a very reluctant Mr. Scheibel, the janitor.
But he immediately sees this. She's quite skilled with it, and she's like, starts to get super obsessed with chess.
Mm-hmm. But he didn't want to teach her at first because chess isn't for girls. And I think that that's a really important thing to bring up.
That is true. But she was relentless, and she was really good, turns out. Because she then immediately, as soon as she likes... started to catch a few things that he was doing, she started to play chess in her head on the ceiling with the trip that she was on with her meds, basically.
Yeah, that happened. And then Mr. Scheibel brings in a friend from the chess club of a nearby high school who takes Beth to play chess, like, against all of the teenage players on the chess club. And she, of course, whips all their asses. And
they're all boys.
All boys. She's like the only girl woman who plays chess at all in this game, really. Her in this TV show, really.
I mean, at the beginning when she goes to her first tournament, she's playing against one girl, but she wipes her ass, basically. That's not how you say it.
She wipes her ass. Heard it here first.
She didn't actually wipe her ass, but she wiped the board with her
ass,
pawns or whatever. Also not with her ass, with a sponge. With a wet one or a felty one. I hope in this moment it was a wet sponge. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe. Oh, God, Amanda wants a felty one. Oh, my God, the cultural disagreements today about wet and felty sponges in whatever areas is unreal.
Yep.
Peter mentions that they actually talk about how they aren't really girls. how there aren't really girls. Yes, there are not really girls. So they have this separate, they always put the, when there are girls, they always put those two girls together in hopes they kind of kick themselves out in a way. And then only they would have moved them over to the men's division. And then Beth already has kicked some serious ass at that time.
Mm-hmm. Makes me curious, like, if they hadn't segregated the girls basically to play against each other, so that it would eliminate the girl competition down to one no matter what. Like, if they had split them up and had, like, the two girls against, like, boys, basically men, what would happen? Would there have been two girls progressing in the competition then? Interesting.
I mean, maybe. I mean, we saw her again, like, in the later stage, and I suppose.
Yeah, she was just, like, really impressed by Beth, I think. It's kind of cool.
Is that an actually, stupid question, real story? I was wondering that all the time. I didn't look it up.
I don't think so. I don't think it was a true story. Otherwise, IMDb would have said, like, based on a true story.
Yeah, but they would have probably said that in the series, too.
Yeah, but I do think
that... Sad time fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would have been here for it if it were real. I mean, definitely. Maybe not for the drugs, but that could have been added in the based on reality, air quotes, thing. So, yeah. And then she...
It's based on a book. It's based on the book by Walter Tevis of the same name.
Nice.
So there you go.
Can read that too. If you want to rather read it instead of watch 10 episodes, then go ahead and do that. If you're a reader.
Mm-hmm. There's only 7 episodes. Sorry.
7. Maybe I got distracted with the trailers then.
Maybe. But yeah, like, it's really interesting the way that this is connected, like, so heavily connected for Beth between, like, drugs and family and friendship and belonging as well, I think. Like, it brought up a lot of different issues for me. But the biggest theme for me for this entire film, may as well be this miniseries, was friendship.
Friendship? Mm-hmm. I mean, something that you really notice compared to a lot of other series that is going on is that it's not very sexually explicit. Like, there are moments when she has interactions with people, but it's not ridiculously over-sexualized in that sense, and it doesn't really matter much for the story, like, kind of at all. Like, it makes it, it's in one, like, of course, it doesn't really depend on whether or not they do have sex, whether or not how their relationship pans out. Of course, it has an influence, but it's not the most important thing about this entire, of all her relationships. It's not the fact that she has or has not had sex with someone. It's always around chess. It always focuses around chess in whatever way.
Yeah, the sex for Beth, I think, was just kind of like, yeah, I had sex with him.
End of story. I mean, with, like, with one she said, oh, that's what it's supposed to feel like. So, like, yeah.
Which, again, kind of indicative of sex in the 60s, 70s.
60s. Yeah.
It was for man's enjoyment. I think
the first one really tried. What?
I said it was, sex was, like, really focused on the man for a very long time.
Yeah. Pony in chat says, to be fair, she was underage for the most part of the series.
Yeah, well, that didn't stop her from taking drugs.
That too. And also, as soon as she was basically adopted, she was, like, what, 15? 16?
Mm. Was she and that then old it when progressed she was adopted?
Rather quickly. There was this scene where she was standing with the counselor, or no, with the woman of the orphanage, basically, when they were talking about how old she is, and they made her say that she's 13, even though she knew that she wasn't 13.
Oh, so yeah, I think she wanted older, to say
she's
right.
Like 15 or something. And so they kinda under the false pretense that she's 13, they adopted her. I don't necessarily think they would have stopped them from adopting her anyway. But, and I think then it was like, what, a year or so? So until she had sex, she was, I'm sure, 18 or whatever.
Mm.
Because then the time progressed really quickly, I think.
Yeah, I think as soon as she went quickly, but she it says on IMDb that by the age of 16 she was competing in the US Open Championship, so like it was fairly like she was still quite young when she was doing like that.
But that wasn't when she immediately the US Open?
Yeah. And I guess that's the one that she met you just scroll back up to get his name. That's when she would have met
Billy.
Not Billy.
Or the other one. Benny.
Not Benny. The one that she actually liked. What was his name? D.L. Towns. Towns.
Oh, but there was nothing. There's nothing going.
Nothing was going on. But like that's when she met him already, and like it was kind of getting.
But that's also, I don't think that was, secret or not secret, because the other person, I don't want to say it out loud now because we're in spoiler territory now. So, we come back to that in a bit and mention it that we're in spoiler territory then. So far, I think we're fine.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was thinking about the first one that she beat.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually where she... The one with the teeth?
The one with the teeth?
The one who fixed his teeth in the end? The one she beat in their first game. Or she didn't beat him.
The one that
moved in with her, basically, for a while.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, okay. I know what you mean about the teeth now. Sorry, I was just like...
What was she talking about?
It clicked in now, I get it. Yes, the one with the teeth. Harry.
Was it Harry?
The one that moved in with her for a while was Harry.
I forgot all the names already.
I've got IMDb open.
But I also can't recognize what color your shirt is, so that's where my brain is at. Beltic, exactly. Beltic is the name. I was like, I'm constantly thinking Belkin, but I knew that was the brand for Apple products. So I'm like, what the fuck? No, that's not it. Something with B.
Harry Beltic. So,
Beltic. Yes. Thank you very much, Galaxy Blooms. The very first champion, exactly. But she met Townsend there already when she was younger, and she won the competition, and then the mother who adopted her then noticed that that's where the money can come in, and then basically didn't force her, she nurtured her and her chess obsession basically more, because she also saw that she had the skill number one, and it also meant money that they could use for their home basically, because of what her husband decided to do basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you want to just like go in, like, put the spoiler warning here so that we can actually talk about this less cryptically?
Cool. Yes, let's do that.
Cool. Spoilers from here on out. Okay.
If you haven't watched this, don't listen to this, and see you next week.
So Beth's adopted mother, was it Alma? Was that her name?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, you say that she kind of encouraged Beth to go to all these chess competitions, and like, yes, I think that happened, but I also think it was for very much the wrong reasons. Like, she didn't really care about Beth's success. It was more like the way to fund their lifestyle that she was used to, for like drink and sedatives, and so that she didn't really have to do too much. Like, I felt like it was quite abusive.
I think that's what I initially that's what I initially thought when I watched, like, at the beginning of everything. I do think that's what she first saw. Like, she saw the money, she saw that that's a way how they can stay afloat, because she wasn't getting any money anymore from her husband because he wanted to divorce her. So all she had was the house and nothing else, and no idea how to even make money or how to do anything, right? So she saw the money in what Beth was doing, and was 100% behind the idea that Beth can basically fund can fund their lifestyle, can fund their house, can fund whatever, and they can travel as well. But I think as time moved on, I do think that they actually developed like this mother-daughterly situation, because when you looked at their relationship going forward, she told her a lot about what was going on with Jess, and obviously she wasn't always interested, but she was there a lot. Like, she was there a lot, she was with her a lot, and I think we only then saw she was there for her in important moments, except the time when she couldn't be anymore, basically. I agree with Pony that at some point the mother had a lot of respect for Beth before she got really into her drinking problem, and then she kind of lost everything.
Yeah, I do think that it did evolve into like a level of respect and maybe awe as well for what Beth was capable of doing. But there was definitely at the start, I think it was very much for the wrong reasons. Like, it was like, oh, you can make money doing this? Like, let's suck the life out of this. Like, do whatever it takes for you to bring in some more money.
Yes. However, I also think that just because something started out as not necessarily good doesn't mean that it cannot become something good. And I do think at the very end they had something really good between the two of them, which both of them needed. So I think Beth needed the support a lot from her, and she gave her the support, and she also kind of mothered her to the best of her abilities, which for Beth obviously was something she never had. So I do still think that Alma was the best mother that for Beth in her life in that moment, even though it started off from something super selfish. But I mean, adopting her was also a selfish move in the end. It wasn't because she wanted to give someone a home, but because basically her husband wanted to give her something to play with, in a way, to give her something to do in her life other than playing the piano. And I still think she saw in the end, I know she's at the beginning she saw the money, but I do think she saw the potential that she had and then nurtured that potential a lot more than anybody else in Beth's life did before. So I do think, even though it started out with bad intentions, I do think everything changed into something where both of them depended a lot on each other, both of them trusted each other a lot, and both of them wanted something very good for each other. And that's also why she wasn't just taking it lightly when Alma passed away as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with like everything that you're saying, but I would also say, like, when you say she gave her a lot and she really encouraged her, I'm like, and she also gave her a drinking problem. Like, when she's,
I mean,
kind
did,
of,
which she also had in
she
the
also
beginning.
Had
like, she
yeah,
also well, was running on the drugs before. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not that she wasn't prone to addiction anyway. I'm not saying that it's great that she encouraged her to drink, but I also don't think that she was aware how prone Beth generally was to drink so much or take so many meds, because mm-hmm. that's not something that she saw her do. I don't, in fact, you only ever saw Alma drunk and never really Beth, not when they were together.
Yeah, I guess the only time that they really saw that, like, we really saw Beth like super messed up from drink is when, like, after Alma did die and like she was back in the house on her own and just mm-hmm. completely fell apart.
I mean, you also saw it in the orphanage before.
Yes.
And it then obviously became, and it was constantly mentioned. It was mentioned by Beltic that she's taking too many meds. It was mentioned by Benny. And Pony mentions in chat that the addiction, they went for the recurring theme, the genius comes with some sort of downside often. And I do think that's kind of, I do agree with that, that's what they went for as well. Because mm-hmm. they also showed her mother, who was also obviously a very smart woman, considering she had like a PhD written in the 50s, I suppose, 60s, 50s, for women, that was huge. Mm-hmm. So she must
and,
have
like,
been
her
also
innate
like
talent with the piano as well, but she could only play it when nobody was watching or when it was just for fun.
Oh no, I mean her actual mother.
Oh, sorry, her actual mother. Sorry, that we're talking about.
So
Alma
the birth mother. No, the genius theme. Genius comes with a downside was definitely a theme in mm-hmm. the series, because of her birth mother also being like apparently super smart, but having mental health issues a lot. So yeah. She becomes awesome and amazing and starts to travel the world because she's epic and she's really, really good at chess and beats almost everyone.
Except for the Russian.
And occasionally some people that she draws with that she wants to beat. Mm-hmm. But then they become really good friends and really good influences for her life.
Yeah. Partly. Were you that's a little boy from Love Actually, and now he's old and he is like what? A dirty... The Benny Watts was the little boy from Love Actually. And
I know. And I'm just like, you look so weird and big.
You're big, and also you're like a really grungy chess cowboy. What is going on here?
I know. I was like, why did they make you look like this? And why do you have such like the knife in the pocket and the cowboy hat? And you were so adorable and so cute when you were younger, and now you're this. Ugh. It took grungy me a very long cowboy. Time That's, to like, get used to this.
I didn't get it. I was like, okay, but really? Why? This is interesting. Okay.
Yeah. No.
But I actually really liked his character.
Oh my god, Galaxy Bloom, who was he again?
No, Harry Melling, who played Harry Beltek, that was Dudley Dursley, was in Harry Potter.
Oh no, I didn't recognize that, but now that you say it, I'm like, oh yes, of course. Oh, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird, right? Because you're like, Dudley Dursley was so...
Not like that.
And like really overweight, probably wearing a fat suit or something. And then like just Harry Melling as Harry Beltek is just like quite a nice looking guy. And you're like, oh, wow.
I can't even. I didn't even ring a bell that the guy looked familiar or anything.
You're so funny.
Oh, it's like Dudley needs a Neville glow up. Yeah.
Basically.
I mean... It doesn't matter to me whether or not he was fat or not. He was just an annoying piece of shit in HP. So that's why I'm like, that's what makes you more of a twat. But he had such a nice role and such a warm role, I find. And he was just really like, he really, really cared for her. Mm-hmm. And
it was like such a nurturing, encouraging role that he had. And like, I feel like he really did love her.
I think so too. I think
so too. Who she was, not her chess talent. Like, yeah. That was part of it. But I think that the love was actually for Beth Harmon, the person, yeah. Not Beth Harmon, yeah. The chess prodigy.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I also think for the 60s, I do think the portrayal of him was really not predatory. Like, mm-hmm. he was... Like, they made him a really nice role, which was mainly supportive and nurturing and being there for her and all that, and giving her the space that she needed when she, like, needed it, and not being, like, the guy who was just out to get her in her pants, basically. I mean, in the end, he did get in her pants, but that was very... I felt they did that kind of respect... In a very respected way, like respective. No, that's the wrong word, but respectful. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I think that was kind of a recurring theme throughout all of the men that she encountered in the chess tournaments, is that they seem to all really like Beth Harmon for Beth Harmon, not like her chess skills. Like, there was, yeah, okay, people are like, oh, she's really talented, blah, blah, blah. But the people that she really connected with, like Benny Watts and Harry Beltek and even Borgov in a way, like, there was, like, a respect for Beth Harmon, the person, and, like, genuine care for her, the person. Like, I even with Borgov, like, I felt like there was more than just, like, a respect for her chess skills. Like, they were, like, seemed like he liked her as a person and like felt almost fatherly towards her.
I'm wondering though if that's something because they're all in the same field, so it doesn't be, it's not, and they have all been in the position of being the best in the field at one point, so they know what it's like to be looked at for just that skill that you have. And the outside world obviously is treating you only for that one skill that you have. So when you're with people who share the same skill, even though there are like people who are better than you or worse than you or whatever, it's easier to see them as humans, because you've been through that as well and you know what it is like.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point, actually. Pony saying, the way we applaud men for being decent human beings, the bar is that low. You're right.
It is, it's just, though, sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, I hate to say it, but kind of, yeah.
Also, we also have to, I think, really be... take the historical placement of this entire thing into account. And in the 60s, things were really rough and different than it is now. Like, it feels like they glowed up the entire... I do think if it would have been historically accurate, if it would have been an historical situation, things would have looked really different.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she basically had, besides the guy that she had sex with for the first time, like all of the other people, they were super respectful. All the other men in her life, they were mostly really respectful with her and around her. And that's, it was never really, like, sex wasn't really a big topic in this entire series.
No. One place where I think that the bar was actually kind of exactly where it probably should have been in the 60s was Alma's ex-husband, who...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was just, like, typical man husband who really just wanted to give his wife something to keep herself entertained. But when that got too hard, he was just like, peace out.
I don't even... did he find... that's something I didn't quite get. Did he find a new wife? Because that wasn't really something that we could... actually see. So did he just leave her, so he left her, or did he leave her?
I'm not sure if there was another woman, but there was definitely, like, he went traveling for business and just kind of never came back because life was too hard.
Yeah, what a twat.
Yeah, it just felt like 60s behavior to me.
Yeah, I mean, probably still sometimes 2020 behavior, unfortunately. True. But I mean, especially difficult because women in the 60s were not really like working for themselves and making an income and making a living for themselves, so surviving on their own was just also kind of out of this world and almost impossible. So I think that's also the reason why Alma then saw the potential in Beth and used her for that. But what else were they supposed to do, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like when you just kind of some your husband up and leaves, like, I mean, yeah. I get it, like, it still sucks the way that it happened, and like the way that, I guess, society was, that, you know, that was the way that Alma had to respond. Like, well, she didn't have to, but that seemed like the best way out was to, like, ride on the coattails of Beth. But I mean, it worked out for them. But, well,
yeah. Beata wants to point out that 60s women were already working before they had kids.
It's true. But
she clearly was not one that was working. Mm-mm, otherwise, she would have been working.
Yeah, she was.
And they wouldn't have found a toy for her to play with. A toy.
Toy being a child.
Toy being a child, yeah.
For sure.
I mean, still in the end, it's probably best to get kids out of orphanages if you care for them somewhat well, even if you want them for your own entertainment, but that's basically what they tried anyway, so get their own kid and didn't happen, so that's why they picked one up. It sounds like they bought one, but it looked very like a very quick process in the end.
It was a super quick process.
Yeah
It's not that quick anymore, so I hear.
Yeah, no not at all.
I also, like, when it became really bad for Beth, and, like, she was very unable to care for herself, and, like, after Alma died and she went through, like, her pretty big depression, as you would, natural, and, like, going through her, like, becoming basically an alcoholic, and then Jolene from the orphanage shows up in her life again, and, like, I just love that she showed up and was like, you know what? we're going to get through this together. Like, she even gives her the freaking money to go to Russia or was it Paris that she gave the money for? And it was just like, this is some
Russia.
Yeah, I'm not sure which one it was.
So she gives her a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. And like, just really is that overarching theme for me of friendship, like always being there to pick you up when you're at your lowest points. Pony believes that Jolene was the catalyst in it all, and I can totally see how Jolene is the catalyst. Like, she started out everything by telling Beth about the blue drugs and like save him and get a high, and then like, just she's such her own person as well. Like, she was not okay with basically anything going on in the school and her in the orphanage school orphanage. Like, I think that there was a lot there that we could probably have a whole episode about, like, Jolene with lots of
I did done. Read an article that didn't wasn't very not support, like, they basically described Jolene as this token black woman that just comes into the show, that is not her own character is not properly developed in the story. Like, you don't see loads from her or know loads about her, and then you don't see her for almost the entire rest of the series until she suddenly shows up and helps, like, is that savior for Beth, who on her own right did never reach out to her. So there wasn't really, so they I need to find it again. I don't know where it is. Hang on. And wow. I think, yeah, she just showed up and you didn't see them have any contact whatsoever.
I mean, like, yeah, I can definitely see that. But I don't think that that's unique to Jolene. Like, Beth didn't really make a point of reaching out to anybody. Everybody was always reaching out to her. And I think, like, this probably stems from, you know, her mother did die. She was in an orphanage, and then she went and lived with Alma, and then she died. Like, she was used to being abandoned, and like, yes, there could have been more Jolene in the story, but there also could have been more Benny, there also could have been more Beltic, there could have been a lot more of everybody. And it was those people reached out to Beth never reached back out to anyone. Like, it was I think there was a lot of self-preservation there for Beth. And yeah, so I totally see what you're saying, but I don't think that it's specific to Jolene. I think that it was like in the entire overarching, another overarching theme of the entire Queen's Gambit.
I will just also post the link in chat because I found it now. So it says, the Queen's Gambit's endgame marred by the blatant tokenization of Jolene.
Pony agrees with me and says the same thing would apply to Harry. He just tracked her and showed up at her door, which is exactly what happened. And that happened with Jolene as well.
Once Beth is adopted, Jolene vanishes until the final episode to help Beth make it to Russia and make sure she goes to the funeral of her mentor. As a sole black character, while charming thanks to Ingram, it is just unpleasant to watch Jolene talk like a weird black exploitation character in a show that doesn't touch on race at all outside of her. The world we see of Chess is overwhelmingly white, which is someone who grew up with up watching old black men and old men of all races in the parks play chess doesn't ring true to me. But even putting aside for a number of reasons, it makes Jolene's magical Negro reappearance cringe. That's the reason why it was she questioned Jolene's showing up there and basically being the token black woman, black person that in a show that's then predominantly white. But yes, I do agree with what you're saying, that Beth is obviously not very socially inclined very well. Like, I'm not even saying that. I'm just, she's probably a huge introvert and doesn't necessarily need a lot of people around her. When she has the right people around her, is obviously, they reach out to her and she pulls from them too, I think. Like, she needs them occasionally and they help her and she knows that she needs them in a way. And the only person I think she really has this obvious contact and connection with is Townsend, which is, but also the relationship that I don't understand really, like, why he's so important to her in her life.
Yeah, I didn't quite get that as well. I think like there was that little flirtation at the very beginning, and I also felt like he was a lot older than her, which is probably what some of that attraction was for her, because she saw this like older man who had some kind of vested interest in her, and like that made him extra appealing because he was like older and dangerous, and that seemed to be like kind of the stuff that got Beth going, was that little bit of danger. I'm not saying
Towns
was danger, but
I think compared to a lot of other men in all the competitions that she was at, I actually think Towns was the least terrifying one, like the person who I would have been the least scared of, because he was like just very warm and at the beginning a bit fatherly to her actually, and that's where I'm like, okay, I can see maybe that's what kind of attracted her to him, because of how he was taking care of her and he was making sure that she's getting through it, and that's something that she never really had, like this manly figure in her life. Oh well, besides the janitor, besides Scheibel, but he was not very warm compared to Townsend, who was really warm to her. And then they met again, and it was all of a sudden like, oh my god, this is the best thing ever. Like like as if they've been friends forever, which they haven't been. They've just met each other ages ago, and that was just always a weird situation for me. Like every other relationship that she had, they kind of worked on that transition from not knowing each other well to knowing each other better. But with Townsend, he was taking care of her and he was like, well done, kid. And then the next time they met, they were like, oh my god, we see each other again. And then they almost hook up with each other until you find out that he's actually gay. Which I also find such a weird moment at that moment, because he was, if I would have been in her shoes, I would have thought he is obviously hitting on me.
I seem to have missed the whole thing about Towns being gay. Like, I actually don't recall that at all.
You didn't? What? Oh, God. So Townsend, when they met for the second time. Towns. When they met for the second time. At this competition, he took pictures. He was the journalist for this.
Yeah, he was in her bedroom taking the sexy pictures of Beth.
They were in his bedroom.
Sorry, taking the sexy pictures of Beth.
Exactly. And in that moment, a guy comes in and into his bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very friendly with each other and they were a couple.
Were they?
Yes. Because they also googled it afterwards.
Right. Okay. That's like super subtle, like so subtle that I missed it, because like in that moment, it was very much like.
And then she immediately left the room. Like, but why do you think she left the room so fast?
Because she realized how uncomfortable it was that this man that was like 10 years older than her was like taking super sexy pictures of her.
I don't know. See, she was ready for it. And she never once was she creeped out, because it was always, she was always driving that kind of, she was so into it.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It was like boyfriend walked in on them taking sexy photos. Awkward.
Yeah, it was way too subtle for me. I totally missed that. Like 100% missed that. Putting my hands
because
up there.
Otherwise it wouldn't have made it. And never once, she was so ready, she would have been, that's what she want, like that's what I saw, like she was ready for that. And that the reason that she backed out of it for me was because she saw that he's actually in a relationship with a man, and then she ran away, and then they never talked again.
Yeah, I don't know, that it never even occurred to me, because like if that was the boyfriend that walked in, he was just kind of like, all right, you two carry on then. Like, he didn't, if it was the boyfriend, would you not have been pissed off? Would you not have been like, oh my god.
If you know that your partner is gay, why would you? If you're secure about your sexuality, you're not terrified if someone else is doing something with a person that you know they're not actually attracted to.
No, like, I get that.
I mean, that's how I would see it.
It just never occurred, like, over my head.
Yeah, he said something. Yes, I know, it was something that was, that kind of showed that they are very familiar with each other.
Not arguing that he's not gay, I'm just saying
I also read up on it because I was like, is he now? What? The reason why I was questioning what I saw was because he was so apparently into her in that moment. And yes, the dude was almost like he was...
He was without a top, but he was down at the pool, wasn't he? So you don't really wear a top to the pool.
No, I don't know. It wasn't just that. It was the entire interaction. It was not just because he was topless. It was everything. It was the confidence he walked in with. It was how he talked to him. It was how he didn't give a flying fuck that he is just there kind of flirty with someone and taking pictures with someone. It was a safety that I only see in relationships, kind of. You know? A safety and how they talk with each other. Yeah. It's something that I was...
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I'm not arguing about it. I'm just, like, I didn't see it. It's all that I'm saying is that I didn't see it.
But then this entire story is still super fucking weird with Towns, because they meet, they have a fatherly thing, then they meet again after years where she's older, and then suddenly it seems to be something. Then this immediately breaks up because she notices something or whatever. She notices he's gay, or there is something that kind of splits that up, which is not super obvious. And then they don't talk again for years, and then they meet again, and then they're super excited to see each other again. And then it's mostly friendship in the end. And I'm like, this is so confused. Like, I don't see... There is nothing. Like, there is no progress. There is just jump from one to the next.
No, I don't mean, like, I shouldn't have a romantic connection. Just, like, if something... Like, if, for example, when she had the relationship with Harry Beltic, like, it just kind of ended and she moved on to, like, Benny Watts. And, like, there was just... I don't know. Maybe it was just so superficial that there was... And by superficial, I mean whether that was superficial within, like, the way that Beth viewed the relationships, or whether it was the way that it was filmed, so we didn't actually get as much, like, insight into all of her actual feelings about it. But it felt like she just kind of hopped to the next, like, friendship or romantic relationship.
I think the time zone is, like, the timeline is very confusing. And Gary also says... it's almost as if we missed so much of those two characters' story. It just seemed so jump around so much. And that's why I'm thinking, because for me, the timeline of this entire thing wasn't very clear. Like, I wasn't sure how much time has passed between the sections of the thing, right? I don't think that was super obvious, like, when you watched it all in one go. Like, you were like, how much time did pass now? Like, you look much older, but how much older are you actually? And you couldn't see it from anyone else just because she looked a bit more adult, that was all. So you couldn't really tell, was it like 2, 3, 4, 5 years that has passed since then? And also, just because it then jumped mainly from one chess tournament to the next tournament, there was no overlap really on this entire relationships that they had going on, basically. And you then didn't really know what was even happening.
Yeah, I think, like, that the portrayal and the passing of time was something that wasn't super touched on to kind of help clear up the timeline.
Yeah.
Unless, like, you know exactly what year all the, or what month and what year all the chess tournaments were played on. Because, yeah,
it's
confusing.
I think that's also the reason why I think the relationship seems so jacked and seems like so back and forth, jumpy. Number one, because she's not very socially... She's not one who's, like, super warm. She's probably, again, very introverted and not one who is actively looking for relationships with people of whatever kind. Like, is it friendship? I think she pulls from them when she has them, but she's not one to go out mainly, obviously, I'm pretty sure, because of what she has been going through in her life. Like, people in her life that she loves come and go. So if you've experienced what she has experienced in her life, then I'm sure that nobody would actively try to find other people to share their life with, but that doesn't mean that you don't need them. And I think that's what we saw most of the time, that people cared about her and looked out for her, but then when they went, it was like, move on and walk on, basically.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, I mean, did you cry during the last episode? Because I 100% did.
I don't know. I don't think I cried. I found it super empowering. Like, it was so fascinating to watch. And I think what I loved about it is that she figured out that she can do what she can do without the drugs. Mm-hmm. And she can do it so well. And that everybody, it was an entire, they were all so respectful with her. And that just made me all warm and fuzzy inside, basically.
It was the way that, like, Benny and Beltic kind of brought all of these, like, people from her chess life together into Benny's apartment. And they were all there on the phone with her, giving her, like, that boost of confidence that she really needed. And that, like, assurance that she can do that, like, and win the competition without the drugs. And, like, I don't know. It was just seeing them all together. And it was like, I'm here. I'm here, too. Hi, I'm here, too. And I was just like,
yeah.
Waterworks. Like, I just broke. I was like, I can't. This is such a heartwarming story of friendship and, like, sticking with somebody even through the darkest times and helping them, like, encouraging them and reassuring them and, like, being there for them.
For me, the one who was really the one who pulled through with her in her darkest times was actually Beltic, because everybody else kind of either dropped her at some point or was never really in her life for very long. Like, Towns wasn't really, like, he just came and then was this knight in a shining armor who gave her the last in-person confidence for some reason without having, like, proper, I don't know, for me it wasn't like, it was a weird fucking relationship kind of.
It's because
so
they were,
like,
mind-fucking each other, and that means so much more sometimes than, like, physically.
But they were, what, mind-fucking each other? You mean that they had sex with each other in their head, or they were playing chess in their head?
Both.
I don't know. I think she had a deeper chess relationship with Benny, for example. Like, he was her equal in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
Benny was the one who was driving her chess skills forward. Towns was just there. For me, it was just there because it was only that she was longing for him so much. That's it. I don't necessarily think he was longing for her so much, but she was longing for him so much. But other than that, for me, there was no relationship whatsoever. They just
then
suddenly made
it into
a relationship.
But if there wasn't something romantic there from him, though, why did he go all the way to Russia? Like, he had to pull some
kind
of
strings. He's also a journalist.
Yeah, but even then, like, it's not that super easy to get into Russia in the 60s.
But he was writing for a chess journal. He was writing for a chess journal.
They brought that up, though, in the show. Like, she said, like, how did you even get here? Like, why did you do this? Like, it was quite a big deal that he was able to come from America to Russia.
I don't know. I don't think it's so... I don't know. I think it's because I have no hollow... That for me, it was a hollow relationship with... There was just big fanfare and not a lot else. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't founded on anything, because there was nothing. For me, I didn't see anything that would necessarily... So there was nothing of no foundation that would justify that outcome for me. That would justify his importance in her life for me. None. Beltic tried really hard. Everybody was supporting her, but Beltic was the one who showed up at her door. Like, Beltic was putting in so much work for her, and not only for her chess, but for her. Mm-hmm. For her to be a better person, for her to not basically kill herself in the midst of all the things she's passionate about. His main concern was not that she burns herself out, and she worked. He worked for that, to meet her, to check in with her, to make sure she's all right. He was doing actual labor work. Benny was doing the chess work for her. He was like trying to make her a better chess player. He was teaching her all the things he knows. And Towns was just showed up, popped off. They didn't even say bye in the end. Like, what the fuck is that? He just smiled and whatever. And for me, he was very good looking. That's it. Period.
Yeah, it's like, actually, as you're saying this, I feel like each of the characters in Beth's life played like a very specific role in helping her grow as a person. Like, and helping her, like, they all nurtured a completely different part of her. Like her mother or adoptive mother Alma kind of nurtured that addictive part of her. Like you say, Benny nurtured the chess part of her. Beltic nurtured the real part of Beth. Like, they all kind of brought something else, something in. They all helped flesh out one of the many, like, sides of Beth, if that makes sense. Like, but there wasn't really one character that was all round and brought out, like, did all sides of it.
I agree with what you're saying. And Beatrice says, let's be honest, our first crushes are usually like that, right? Yes. But I also won't see my crush now, 20 years later, and be all like, oh my God, I'm so glad I saw you. Because I'm aware that that's how my 17, 16-year-old brain worked. So I'm like, and I know that they have not influenced my life in a way that I'm like, I don't know.
But I think, like, the time span that passed in the Queen's Gambit, I think it was, like, maybe other than, like, once she was adopted by Alma, like, I think it was really only 5 or 6 years time span. Like, it wasn't 20 years. Like, this was all in a fairly condensed amount of time. Like, it wasn't stretched out over decades that she was seeing towns on and off. It was really within a period of years, like, a couple years.
I do think it was at least 10 years. I don't know, I found his... He was very nice to look at. That's for sure. Like, he was a very good-looking man. I'm not saying anything against that. But for me, this specific relationship was... kind of useless for me. Like, useless to the point that I don't understand. Like, it was very useful for her, obviously, at the moment when she had her first tournament. He was important for her there. I totally fully assign that. But I think the importance they gave him in the series was unnecessary and made no sense for me. I'm trying to find out what the time span is.
Mm-hmm. I am, because it will bug me. Thank you so much, Wikipedia. The time span of Queen's Gambit, 67 minutes. Thank you. Not the answer I was looking for.
Well, I'm wondering if they know, because I don't think it's very obvious. So unless somebody said it's from X, Y, and Z, I'm not sure.
It says it begins in the mid-1950s and proceeds into the 1960s. So the orphanage scenes were in the 1950s. And then, like, the, what was it, 1968 and 69 was the chess tournaments that they were talking about.
What?
Or that they went to.
90 what?
It was, like, 1968 and 1969 were kind of the years that they kept showing
like, between the 50s, like, if you say 55, it's 15 years from the orphanage to...
Mm-hmm. But the orphanage, when she was a young girl, like, what I'm saying is when she was adopted by Alma, that there was really only like 10 maybe years. A span of like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, but when she came into the orphanage at 9 is what they said, like, somewhere. So when she's 15, it's 6 years. And then to 96 from the 50s, it's like 7, 8 years, 9 years.
Okay, she's like... If she was, say, mid-1950s and she was 9 years old, right? So 6 years on top of that is 61. So, okay, maybe 7 years? Like, I don't think it was, like, a very, very long time.
But then I don't understand how they all talk about her being so grown up at the time. You know what I mean? Like, they suddenly presented her as, like, this huge adult who is doing things. And that's what confuses me about the timelines, because it was so not clear how much time actually passed between then.
Yeah, I don't think there was a lot of time, and it was really not clear, and it's obviously not clear because we're like, when was the time? But yeah, that was something that was weird for me. I was like, after her mother died and she was like, well, just buy this house, and I'm like, aren't you like 19? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's just very, very confused. Fun fact about this movie, which I found trying to find out how long this was supposed to be. The Queen's Gambit was originally supposed to be a film back in 2008, directed by Heath Ledger, starring Elliot Page.
No way!
Yeah. And then, unfortunately, Heath Ledger passed away, and it didn't happen.
Imagine that movie.
Yeah. Would have been totally different.
I'm kind of sad that didn't happen, but I will forever mourn Heath Ledger's death anyway.
So, on that shocker, I don't have anything else to say. I think I've covered everything. But honestly, this is one of the shows of the year for me.
Is it? This, interesting.
Yeah, I loved it. I may have sounded at times like I was poo-pooing it, but I wasn't. I just like to talk shit a lot. I genuinely enjoyed this a lot.
I think whenever something like that happens, I'm always the one who kind of poops on stuff.
Yeah. But yeah.
But like, that's not always the reason, because I also don't like things, but just because I talk about shit all the time.
I appreciate that The Queen's Gambit started a bit of a repopularity of chess as well, because who doesn't love chess?
I mean, I don't know if I did the chess course once when I was younger. So I know what a rochade is, but that's absolutely everything.
My dad taught me to play chess when we were on holiday in New Brunswick once.
Aww. So apparently there are loads of different things to know, and I don't think my brain is strategic enough for shit like that.
I'm definitely not strategic enough, but yeah. I enjoyed it all the same.
Yeah, it was really interesting to watch. Cool. So that was our opinion on The Queen's Gambit. And yeah, that's it for this week's episode.
Yeah. We'd love to know what you thought about The Queen's Gambit. So let us know in the comments of wherever you see this episode. Send us an email at hi@geekcaring.com or join us on Discord at geekcaring.com/Discord, where we can talk more about The Queen's Gambit or other things as well.
Or other things. So see you again next week for another amazing episode of Geek Herring.
Bye.
Bye.
If you like this episode of Geek Herring, why not leave us an iTunes review? You can also find us on social at Geek Herring and over on geekherring.com.